Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex, you are on site at the Hero World Challenge in the Bahamas. Unfortunately, no fun in the sun for you with that skin cancer. I did not actually believe until I saw the replay that you are bandaged up this week. Has that been a tough scene, seeing Tiger Woods, Will Zalatoris, Jordan Spieth, and others completely bandaged above your right eye?
It's not a good look on TV, I can tell you that. I've gotten a lot of feedback from everything that happened today. Obviously, Tiger Woods talking. There's been a lot of frenzy. You and I were on together doing the Rex and Lav thing on the early show, and I haven't gotten the results back, so let's don't joke too much about it.
It does look very hot. It does look very sunny there, so we do appreciate you braving the elements, potentially adding more cancer to your litany of other issues. As you mentioned, Rex, this was a big day. As big a day as you can get on November 28th of the year, the Tiger Woods press conference, the first time he's playing in a tournament since the Masters, and we'll get to that certainly, his expectations this week in 2024. But this was also, Rex, the first time that Tiger has met the media since that June 6th deal between the PGA Tour and Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund. We were all wondering, what did Tiger Woods think of that secret agreement? And we now know the answer. He was pissed. Plain and simple, he was pissed.
Yeah, I was curious. You and I talked about this on the podcast last week, and it was odd because I've sat through a lot of these press conferences, specifically here at the Hero, and there's always been something going on off the course. There's been some sort of surgery that is coming back from. There's been something that's happened off the course that it's sort of the awkward question. It's the awkward elephant in the room. And this time around, I was really curious to see how he was going to embrace, because you and I came up with a dozen questions about all of the things that you just mentioned. He hadn't talked since June 6th, the framework agreement. He hadn't talked since he was added to the policy board, essentially an 11th hour ad just to appease the players because they were so angry. And I will say this, and when we mentioned this earlier today on the show, that he had an agenda. And the agenda was to say that he wasn't happy at all with the way that went down. And it won't happen again. Tiger Woods is really, really good at talking for a long time and not saying a lot. And that's not a criticism. It's sort of just a byproduct of being the best player of his generation. And every tournament, after every round, we stick a microphone in his face. We expect him to say something and entertain us. And that's really hard to do. It's impossible to do. But on this particular occasion, I will say that the message he had wasn't necessarily, certainly not to me or to the media. It wasn't even necessarily to the fans. I think it was to the PGA Tour leadership. And I'm sure that he has put it in other more blunt ways when it comes to his conversations with Jay Monahan and the rest of the leadership. But this was a very public, I don't want to say scolding, but it's clear that what happened on June 6th, that the framework agreement that was negotiated without any input whatsoever from players is not going to stand, that they will not let that happen again. It's why he wanted to become part of the process. It's why, after being frustrated, that's the word he used the most in his press conference, he used the word governance. And that's a big part of what's going on right now. You and I talked to Davis Love 2 weeks ago kind of about this. Davis Love is on that ad hoc committee that's going to come up with whatever the PGA Tour's new governance is going to look like. And Tiger wants to make sure. He wants to be the person in the room that decides exactly how these decisions are going to be made going forward.
Yeah, we did this podcast, Rex, last week from the Spin Studio, which I believe was our fifth attempt at doing the podcast during Thanksgiving week, when we were going over the list of questions that Tiger Woods was going to be asked and potentially previewing some of his answers. He was a little bit more forceful, as you say, in his condemnation of how it all went down than I was perhaps anticipating or expecting. He was clearly not happy with Jay Monahan. I think that's the reason for his silence over the past 5 months. He was clearly angry. He felt betrayed. He felt blindsided, as many players did, particularly the top players of the PGA Tour. He was also predictably coy, Rex. I thought Tiger was on some of the details, on what that actually means, on what he actually wants the governance structure to look like, of what won't and can't happen next time. He expressed urgency and frustration with the timetable as it relates to either the PIF deal or some of these outside investors who want to invest in the PGA Tour. I thought that was kind of the most interesting because it was really two press conferences. We're going to get into his play. I know that's what a lot of people are interested in hearing. But this press conference with the June 6th fallout and the future of the PGA Tour was interesting because Tiger was he just sounded like disdainful of how long it was taking when you have 4 to 5 weeks until you get this December 31st deadline.
Well, and to be fair, and I think I mentioned this about Rory McIlroy the week after he resigned from the PGA Tour policy board, and you talked about his level of frustration following that Monday meeting during the RSM Classic. It was a sun up to sundown meeting by all accounts, and he's on the other side of the planet, and I'm sure it was miserable, and I'm sure Rory wants things just to get done. That at this point, I can only imagine how many meetings they've sat through and talked these issues ad nauseum. And at some point, as a player, as someone that sort of isn't born and raised to do this type of thing, you get tired of talking in the same circles. That I'm sure this happens in corporate America everywhere, but they're just not geared that way. They want to have results. It's the way they're wired. So I think in this particular case, he wants results. And you and I have talked about this in the past, that December 31st deadline and the framework agreement, it's always kind of been a soft deadline. I've never really put much stock into the idea that, okay.
It was incredibly ambitious, wasn't it, Rex? I mean, the idea that the entire future of the PGA Tour could be decided in basically 6 months since the deal was announced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the idea that something so complicated, and I've said this before, but I can only imagine how difficult it is to negotiate a $1 billion deal. Now you add to that all of the other nuances of this. How do the LIV players come back? How do the PGA Tour players who stayed get made whole again? All of those things just complicate matters even more. I've always felt like that December 31st deadline was just to keep folks moving in the right direction, whoever that is, whether that's the public investment fund or some other private equity. But in this particular case, hearing Tiger talk today, and Jordan Spieth kind of echoed his comments. He came into the media center after Tiger that they want to have something done by December 31st. And what if that's a definitive agreement or not? I'm not quite sure, but they want to see something in paper. They want to see progress.
One of the conspiracy theories that we posited last week on the podcast was that Rory McIlroy left the day after that Marathon board meeting. It was during the RSM Classic, was because perhaps the private equity piece of the PGA Tour Enterprises had been accomplished. They knew the direction and they were going ahead with that, and kind of the PIF deal was something else that needed to be sorted out. I'm not so sure after listening to Tiger, after reading Jordan Spieth's transcript. I mean, there's just so many moving pieces that it doesn't seem possible. Yet maybe you do have some idea what you want to do with the financial backing, but what the PGA Tour is actually going to look like in 2025. I mean, Tiger broached the topic of, how do you incorporate team golf, which would seem to be some sort of merger with LIV Golf that would potentially be down the road, or having, you know, co-sanctioned events. Rory McIlroy talked about it a couple of weeks ago in Dubai about how do you make some of the biggest events on the European Tour part of the PGA Tour schedule as a whole as well, and having kind of 20 to 25 events on the PGA Tour that make it the absolute best place to play golf. Those sort of conversations appear so far off to not even mention how you would bring back the LIV players. And so Tiger's expressing urgency. Tiger wants answers. It just doesn't seem like we're poised to get them in the next 4 or 5 weeks. Rex, what else stood out to you about Tiger's kind of future look of the PGA Tour, or kind of how else the June 6th deal went down?
I do want to say that I had to come outside because there was some ambient noise inside the media center that you didn't like. You didn't like me sitting in the shade, so you had me move. So I had the sun on my face, which we've talked about. We can clearly see I probably shouldn't be out in the sun right now. And now I've got Todd Lewis standing behind me having some sort of random conversation with someone that's not helping the situation.
Hi, Melanie. Yeah, we get T. Lou home on Monday. Don't you worry.
It's either Melanie or Volpe, one of our producers. It's got to be some, maybe someone back in Connecticut as he wanders back into my shot. I'm going to say this, and to your point, I think Tiger Woods, more than anyone, understands how complicated this is. He understands all the different layers of this. I've said this before, and I still believe that there aren't any answers about which way the tour is maybe leaning in these negotiations, because I don't think there are at this point. I think it's still very much a moving target. The idea that the PGA Tour could sign just some sort of definitive agreement with the PIF, or maybe it's not with the PIF, it's with some other private equity, or a combination of those two things, which seems to be sort of the topic du jour that everyone seems to be leaning into. The idea that nothing could happen and we can move along the way we were before. I think Tiger Woods has an idea the way he wants it to go, and he's made it clear, to go back to what I think he wanted to stress, that this will be decided by the players, that they have 5 votes on the policy board, and there's 5 independent directors, and then the director of the PGA of America is sort of that deciding vote, and I'm not quite sure how that falls into all of this, but it'll be the players ultimately that decides how this plays out. And that's a direct result of June 6th and sort of that betrayal that we talked about. I'll say this, that everyone involved, it seems like, wants to see some sort of progress, not the kind of progress that Jay Monahan talked about in the memo 2 weeks ago after that last policy board meeting, but something tangible, something you can write down on a piece of paper and say, this is what the tour roughly will look like starting next year and beyond. We're not there yet. I'm not quite sure we get there before December 31st.
Tiger Woods used the word murky to describe the current and ongoing negotiations, and I think that was very appropriate for where we find ourselves on November 28th. One of my favorite things to do, Rex, after a big press conference like this is kind of peruse the headlines that you see around the world of golf. And here's a sampling of those non-June 6, non-merger, non-live, non-PIF related headlines. Optimistic Tiger ready for return at Hero. Tiger Woods makes shock declaration. He could play every month in 2024. Woods aims for monthly tournaments in 2024. Come back, and Woods says he'll, quote, walk away from golf when he no longer believes he can win.
Not run.
Nah, definitely not run. Walk, probably walk with a significant limp. To me, Rex, jotting down notes from the press conference, and there's a bevy of content up on the site, nbcsports.com/golf, is Tiger Woods said, in a perfect world, best case scenario, he can play 4 to 6 times in 2024. It's pretty easy to see which tournaments those would be. You look at this schedule and it's the way it's laid out in the PGA Tour. That would be the Genesis. That would in February. That would most likely be the Players' Championship in March. And then you have the four major championships. It seems unlikely, barring some sort of either 2 or 3 high finishes in those events, he would even qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs. So we can rule that out for the time being. Was that overly optimistic? Was that setting the bar too low? Where did you kind of fall on Tiger Woods' expectations, the fact that he could play monthly, Rex, from February until July?
Well, monthly, when he first said it, and then I think he sort of circled back around as he finished up his answers and said, essentially starting in February, to your point, starting at the Genesis Invitation, which benefits his foundation, he's the host, that makes complete sense, and then ending in July, which would be the Open Championship. Because in my mind, monthly starts in January and goes through December, and that's clearly not the case. No. He's not playing 12 times. You're right. It's going to be 4 to 6 times. I would say that's ambitious for no other reason than he's played a total of 8 events the last 4 years, and that's not 8 full events, by the way. I mean, he obviously withdrew after the third round this year at the Masters. So based on sort of his recent history, his recent body of work, no, I don't see 4 to 6 events coming out of him a year. That being said, he clearly felt something, and he sort of talked about it today, about helping Charlie, his son, get ready for a junior event about 2 months ago is sort of what led to him being in the field this week, that he had to go to the range with Charlie, and he was carrying the bag around. And as Charlie's hitting balls, Tiger starts hitting a couple of balls, and he starts feeling better and better. And so he ends up here. This week will be a big litmus test. I mean, this will be 90 holes. He has to walk the Pro-Am. And, of course, there's no cut, so there'll be 4 rounds. That it'll be a good test to let him know going into January, getting ready for that first event of the year, which will be in Los Angeles, exactly what his expectations could be. I wouldn't expect him to say anything else. He's been rather consistent on this about it's going to be a limited schedule. It's going to be the majors. It's probably going to be the Players. It's going to be L.A. That's going to pretty much be it. But still, and I hate to say this because, again, I go back to the idea I hate being in the Tiger Woods doubting business because he's proven me wrong so many times. It's hard to see him getting in 6 events next year. I would be pleasantly surprised.
I'm with you, Rex. I mean, this has been the goal for the past 2 years is to play the major championships and maybe something else, maybe a tournament like Riviera, which benefits his foundation, maybe the Players' Championship, the Crown Jewel, and the PGA Tour's flagship event. And it obviously has not come to fruition. He's played just 5 official events on the PGA Tour, including the major championships, since he came back from the car crash in 2021. It's not just the fact of playing 72 holes of competitive golf. It's the practice rounds, the pro-am, the work that he has to do at home leading up to those tournaments. I mean, that takes its toll on a player who's soon to be 48 with a body that probably feels at times like it's 78. You look at the best players in the world, like they don't have these physical restrictions or limitations when it comes to their practice and preparation time. Like Tiger Woods just can't do it anymore. And he's not playing in these sea level events. He's not playing in the Nelson. He's not playing in the Zurich. He's not playing at the Sony Open. Like, he's going against the very best players on the PGA Tour every time he tees it up. And he's obviously not going to sacrifice an opportunity to play in a major championship if it means he can squeeze one more tune-up start, right, at a Riviera or a TPC Sawgrass. Like, he's going to put all of his eggs in the major basket and see how it goes. I'm with you. Six feels incredibly ambitious. It has been ambitious over the past couple of years. However, you saw him up close and personal. How did he actually look? He says he does not have any more pain, Rex, in his fused ankle. Obviously, there's other parts of his body that become sore with the kinetic chain, whether it's his back or his knee. What did you see up close and personal?
Kinetic chain. I love it when he drops kinetic chain in a press conference, because I could just imagine people everywhere immediately Googling exactly what is the kinetic chain. And he talked about, look, he doesn't have the pain in the ankle, but that energy is dispersed somewhere else, whether that's the knee or the hip or whatever the case may be. And it's something he's going to deal with really the rest of his life. And that has nothing to do with golf. I thought it was an interesting point you brought up on our Golf Central hit earlier today. It's probably not the tournament itself that creates the concerns right now. It's all the ramping up. It's getting ready. It was interesting. Will Zalatoris was just in the media center talking, and he had a microdiscectomy this year in April. And it's essentially Tiger's had at least one, maybe two, if I'm counting them correctly. And he just pointed out it's not necessarily getting ready for a tournament round in the morning. Like, that's a pretty straightforward process. It's everything that comes afterwards. And I remember this year at the Masters, where it was like putting himself back together again every single night, getting ready for another cold round to walk on a really, really hilly, demanding golf course. That's going to be the tough part. And to your point, you said sea level events. I think you meant something a little bit different. I immediately took it to actual sea level events. Like, if he could play every event here on this golf course behind me, which it only takes a really quick glance to look over my shoulder to be like, oh, it's flat, it's warm, it's sunny.
A lot of sand. Very sandy out there.
So much sand. And if he could do that every week, then that would probably be okay. But no, he's playing difficult golf courses. Augusta National, really tough walk. Riviera, not really any better.
That's not helping, sir.
And then he's playing against the deepest fields of the year. If you combine both of these things, it just isn't a recipe for success.
Tournament infrastructure appears to be now going up. It's not like they haven't had an entire year to get ready for the Hero World Challenge. And yet here they are. Signage must go up on Tuesday of tournament week. I will say, Rex, like, to hear Tiger now, walking is not going to be as much of an issue as it was. Like, we remember the scenes from Augusta National this year in the Masters. Like, it was hard to watch him literally dragging his right leg up some of those hills.
It's such an ugly picture. I mean,
that was one of like the scenes of the year. It was just so sad. It was so dispiriting to see what he put himself through just to make the cut at the Masters. So I don't think this is any longer going to be an issue of pain tolerance, which is great, because now we can just focus on Tiger Woods, the golfer, and answering the question, can he still hack it? Can he still cut it against players who are in some cases half of his age, who are just as fit as he is, who can hit it longer than him, who are faster than him, who are better drivers, better iron players, better putters, better around the green? Can Tiger Woods, arguably the greatest player of all time, still hack it? I think it's going to be a fascinating question to see answered in 2024. As it relates, Rex, to Tiger's expectations this week, I mean, it's a 20-man field. We're going to get into some of these players who are coming off a stint on the injured reserve list. Players are basically collecting their holiday cash. They've either played sparingly or not at all since the Ryder Cup Tour Championship.
Not Victor Hovland. Victor Hovland's here to win.
Victor Hovland's going to win by 27 shots. But do you think that Tiger Woods can win this week? Excuse me. Tiger Woods cannot win this week. Can Tiger Woods top 10 this week? Tiger Woods is not going to win this week. Man, can Tiger Woods top 10?
Yeah, I love the way you had to roll that one back so quickly. You threw it out there and immediately realized it. Nope.
Oh, God. Absolutely not. Under no circumstances.
Yeah, he can top 10. I don't know the state of his game. It's impossible to say. I'm looking forward to actually following the Pro-Am tomorrow morning. It'll be like just the old days when you just walked out and you decided what you were going to get. I mean, even he admitted he doesn't know what the expectations are. You can tell as I've been sitting here, the sun is setting. Look, it's almost on the other side of my face.
It's wonderful.
By now. Yeah, it's glorious. I will say this. that it goes back to Augusta. And I remember talking with people inside his camp leading up to that first round, and they kept telling me that, man, the swing is fine. The swing is good. Like, we just have to get him around 72 holes, and that's always the tricky part. I think you're right. Probably getting him around 72 holes is not the mile-high climb, metaphorically speaking, that it used to be. I just don't know what his game is going to be like, because as he brought it out, and he's used this analogy before, he's got a pencil and a scorecard in his hand now, and it's entirely different. And he can shoot. Will Zalatoris just told us he shot 73, 74, 72 at his home course a few weeks ago, and he goes, but it's entirely different, even at an event like this, where – the expectations are low, and there's only 19 other players to beat, and most of it is pretty relaxed. Even in those circumstances, I think it's going to be a tough call for him to finish top 10. So, no, I don't think he can.
I think he can finish right around top 10. Like, I still come back to the idea.
Right around
Rex,
top 10. You're giving yourself some wiggle
right
room there. Way to
go.
Like a
8th like to 12th. like an 8th to a 12th. It would not surprise me if Tiger Woods finishes in there. And I say that for the sole reason, like, walking was the hard part. One of the foundational aspects of tournament golf, of competitive golf, Tiger Woods struggled the most with. It wasn't driving a golf ball. He still had plenty of speed. He still had plenty of power. His iron play was predictably sharp. You know, maybe he's not as good of a pitcher of the golf ball or a putter like he was in his heyday, but he was plenty adequate. I go back to the fact he was making cuts in major championships, Rex. He was making the cut in the Masters. We go back to the PGA a couple of years ago. Like, he made there. He ended up withdrawing before the final round, but he made the cut there.
He made the cut this year in L.A., so it's not as though he still can't play the game.
Exactly. Like, his game is still plenty good, even now going on 48. And so if you can eliminate potentially the idea that actually just getting through 72 holes, the endurance and the stamina, that is no longer a chief concern for Tiger, and really all he has to do his focus on his game, I'm still kind of bullish that he could be competitive even in his limited action in 2024. And I think he'll be potentially sharper than maybe we're giving him credit for this week in the Bahamas as well. Tiger, Rex, is not the only player who is a part of comeback season. Will Zalatoris making his first start since he withdrew from the Masters. And as you mentioned, undergoing the microdiscectomy. Kyle Morikawa has some sort of back issue. He played on Monday. He hit balls on Monday for the first time in a couple of weeks. He withdrew from something called the Netflix Cup a couple of weeks ago following his win at the Zozo Championship. And even Jordan Spieth, my precious Jordan Spieth, said that he re-injured his wrist and had to sit out for a couple of weeks following the Ryder Cup. Let's talk about these comebacks either as a whole or individually. All my attention, if it's not on Tiger, is going to be on Will Zalatoris. I absolutely nailed Rex my 2023 season predictions. I said for my player of the year, my player of the year in 2023 was going to be Xander Schauffele. He is still winless, and he is not playing this week, so he has no chance to make that right. And my breakout star, the player who's going to have a big impact on the PGA Tour become a household name, is
Will Zalatoris.
Will Zalatoris.
That's right.
Who played a bunch in the early spring, ended up being too much, injured his back, and has been out for the past 7 or 8 months. You just sat in on the press conference with Willie Z. How did he look? More importantly, how did he sound?
I'm with you. I miss me some Willie Z, only because he's really refreshing. And look, a lot of young players show up on the PGA Tour, and I can only imagine being a 23, 24, 25-year-old and having to sit there and answer questions, not just about your golf game, but about your personal life and everything else. And it must be difficult. I have three sons who are about that age, and I could only shake my head at what would come out of their mouths if you put a microphone in their hand in that situation. So I did miss him on that level. I will say this, and it was very refreshing to hear him go through the process. And I guess it had been a long time, so I kind of tuned it out. But he was getting ready for the Masters. He was getting ready, I would argue, as one of the favorites at the Masters, simply because of how he had performed there before and his form going into it. Maybe not top five favorites. I'm going to do it the way you do it. Top 10-ish
favorites. Yeah, he'd be somewhere between like 8 and 12.
There it is. The 8 and 12, golden. That's the golden hour category right there. Hey, Fred, clip that. Lab says 8 and 12 is the golden, hour.
It's really that sweet spot.
However, and then to imagine getting ready, ramping up, getting ready, and then before you tee off, you're in a golf cart because you just can't go. You have to withdraw, and that's Saturday. I mean, on Monday you were getting ready for the Masters, and on Saturday you're having back surgery. I can only imagine – how devastating that must be for someone of that age. I will say that now that he's gone through the process, and I do love the way he's not afraid to go really, really technical. And he talked about the idea that, look, man, my left heel's off the ground and I got a reverse C going on. Like, that's a recipe for back issues. So it's something that he needed to work on. So he and his swing coach have started to work on keeping the left heel a little bit more on the ground, getting a little bit more rotational. He seems to think that it's going to help him in the long run, not just health-wise, but he feels like he's driving, at least driving the ball straighter. I have high expectations. I don't know if I'm going to pick him as my breakout star next year. I feel like that would be a little reckless given his history, but I do have high expectations for him.
I'm doubling down. I picked Xander Schauffele to win major championships for, like, ever since his Aaron Hills breakout, the 2017 U.S. Open. I picked him to win a major. That hasn't come to fruition. I picked Xander Schauffele to be player of the year. That hasn't come to fruition. I think each and every year, for at least the next 5 years, long live NBCSports.com/golf, I will continue to pick Will Zalatoris as my breakout star. I think he's an incredible asset at the PGA Tour. I think he's a future world number one if his health can cooperate. Rex, last we left these fine folks, on this podcast, we were talking about Thanksgiving. We were talking about our meals that we were having. We were talking about our processes. You had what I would describe as a peculiar choice for Thanksgiving, but I am curious, how did it go? And did you overcook the ribeyes?
Absolutely not. I did not. The sausage finger was up. You missed the cue. That's fine. I did want to double back on Jordan Spieth. Actually, Jordan Spieth said he found something in his wrist. Actually, his medical team found something. There was a level of confidence.
Ulnar nerve. Not good.
Ulnar nerve. He has a level of confidence that I haven't seen since he's kind of been dealing with that. So I would have a little bit higher expectations for him. And Colin Morikawa, I think I've always kind of raised that red flag that, yes, there's tons and tons of things that he does that I love about his game. The one thing that I do concern with is his putting. And the other thing is now he's had back issues. So that's always concerning. And I feel bad because the guys were told to stop working and I'm sitting here yammering on. Hey, you guys keep working. Yeah, that's good. Because I don't want them to have to sit here and wait for us. I will say this. We went with lobster and steak for Thanksgiving Day dinner. We actually had a proper Thanksgiving dinner the day afterwards. We had a Friendsgiving where there was a fried turkey and it was delicious. I think I might do that next year. And I did the steak. They were two big ribeyes, very, very thick, 2.5 inches. And I did it straight Florentine style, which is, as you know, most people know, really, really rare, like not red, almost purple on the inside. And it was delicious. It was so good.
So no one was violently ill the next day while cooking?
No, we all survived. It was really good. My wife wasn't, she was in charge of the lobster and she didn't feel like she did a good job with that. I liked it, but the steak Florentine was so good. And then the next day we did a fried turkey. Now you put
wait,
something
hold on,
out.
Hold on. But you said that Bunk butchered the lobster tails in what way? And would you please be specific? Oh, she overcooked it.
She felt like she overcooked it. I thought it was really good. I feel like it's hard to mess up lobster. Like, all right, I guess it could be a little bit more undercooked. I don't know. Like, lobster is really not my thing. I thought it was good. The boys thought it was fine. But I will say
fine.
This.
Fine.
Fine. You and I traded a lot of snappy chats and text messages on the actual day. You had a whole run-up. You put a really cool video on our TikTok account about getting the bird ready. You smoked a turkey. It seems like an outrageous amount of work.
I mean, it is. As I went through the entire process on this podcast last week, from selecting it to spatchcocking it to dry brining it to getting the smoker ready to injecting it to seasoning it to smoking it to resting it to carving it, like, it's a whole thing. Like, there's a reason why we should probably only do this one time a year. I do enjoy it because, again, you're not doing this on a weekly basis or even on a monthly basis. And yes, you're right. I did my very first Tiki Talk. We put it up on @GCRexAndLav on TikTok. I believe, Rex, it has 2,500 views.
Wow.
Which to me is pretty good for someone that I believe at last check has 5 followers. Hashtags play a large part in that. If I was smart, I would have done the TikTok like a week in advance when I did the practice run for our Friendsgiving. That way people can scroll through it on Tuesday, Wednesday. I actually think that could have gone viral. It came out very well. The actual process of making a TikTok, I found to be quite illuminating. You have to remember to take videos of everything. Like still photos are not going to work. And so that was always, I kind of like had to do things over because I would forget to take a video. And then the voicing over at the end, it's like you're like narrating something, but you have to do it very quickly. I'm
you
sure
do that professionally. Why was that the problem? This is what you do for a living.
Yeah, because I don't speak very well. I'm a writer by trade, and writer till death do me part. However, Rex, I will be doing more TikTok. We will have more than 5 followers. I guarantee it. It just is going to take a little bit of getting used to. We'll clip some of these YouTube clips, and they can go viral, and we can be incredibly famous. Rex, what do you have on the docket away from the golf course? We know you'll be following Tiger Woods. Not quite Tiger Tracker days, but you will be following Tiger Woods nonetheless. If you're not at the golf course, are you playing golf? Are you wearing one of those stupid sun hats to gird yourself from the sun? Are you gambling? And if so, do you think Georgia can cover?
I don't know if Georgia can cover. I know it's going to be a very nervy Saturday for you. I feel for you. I'm sure I'll be getting plenty of snappy chats from you along the way. I drove into the golf course this morning with our friend from ESPN, Mark Schlabaugh, who gave me nothing but 40 minutes of University of Georgia football talk. So I think I'm just about University of Georgia football talked out at this level. But best of luck to you. I will say this, Mark Schlabaugh, the very first question he asked Justin Thomas, and you and I haven't even touched on Justin Thomas, and there's a lot of places we can go if we really wanted to. But the very first question to Justin Thomas, who attended the University of Alabama, is a huge Crimson Tide fan, was your thoughts on 4th and 31, which I thought was just a brilliant way to start a press conference.
Justin Thomas did not graduate from Alabama.
I did not say graduate. I said attended. I caught myself, just to be clear.
He certainly did. He had a decorated career with the Crimson Tide and won a national championship. I mean, that was just an incredible finish to that game. It does not help Georgia, however. Literally nothing that happened last weekend helped Georgia. And now the distinct possibility exists that Georgia could lose its first game in Lily Lavner's entire lifetime. Oof. And yet they somehow miss out on the college football playoff.
We can talk about this next week.
It could be a very surly podcast that could be going 60 minutes or longer next week. That's a good reminder to make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel to make sure you're getting all the updates. Make sure you go to NBCSports.com/golf for all Rex's columns, news, notes, features, and other assorted things from the Hero World Challenge. We'll be back next week for a recap of Georgia's hopefully presumed victory over Alabama in the SEC championship game. And yeah, we'll probably talk a little bit of Tiger Woods as well and his competitive return at the Hero World Challenge. Willie Z, Jordan Spieth, Victor Hovland, Scottie Scheffler, among those also teeing it up this week. All right, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next week. Enjoy the week.
Good luck cutting that up, Brett.